Welcome to the Classic City Sports Podcast.
And McAllister down the left field line. Connor Tate is going to round third. He will score. And rounding third is Blaylock. He will score. And the Dogs rock it off.
If you're looking for the latest Georgia Bulldog news in football, basketball, baseball, and recruiting, then you are in the right place.
It's third down. Bryce Young's career. You need 10. Play clock at 4. From the pocket. Launching downfield. Underthrown and intercepted. Kaylee Ringo has an escort down the sidelines. All the way to the end zone. And Georgia is going to conquer the Crimson Tide.
Hosted by Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams.
Georgia on the mountaintop. Demons be gone and the drought is over. National champions at long last.
Just sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for these hot takes you're about to listen to.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Classic City Sports Podcast. As always, Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams have a fun one for you tonight as Georgia dominates Kentucky yesterday. Just going to be a fun night, right? We get to talk about a complete Georgia performance for the first time this season from the first drive to the last. So we're excited about it. Hope you guys are feeling good tonight as well. Jonathan, how you feeling?
Man, I'm feeling great. I unfortunately did not get to catch the entire game, but of course I had a wedding, so that's not unfortunate. That's always great to be at.
Fall weddings.
Maybe I just need to be at more weddings. Maybe fall weddings is the key for Georgia's success, so if that's the sacrifice I have to make, then maybe that'll be the case and we'll find some more places to be on Saturdays. But no, I ended up rewatching the game when I got home that night, catch a little bit of the second half, and I mean, heck, if you have any complaints after Saturday from the offensive standpoint or even defensive standpoint, then I just don't know that you'll ever be happy. That's about as a perfect of a game against an SEC-ranked opponent that you could have ever asked for. I mean, I was feeling good about Georgia going into this weekend, but I was predicting like a final score of 31-14. Definitely was not expecting Georgia to put up over 50 points. And for the defense, I mean, the defense did its thing, and they shut down Kentucky's running game, which everybody was worried about after Auburn. So
Ray Davis.
Ray Davis, all around great performance from both sides of the football. I think Georgia just, and you know, talent showed out. Both teams play a similar style of football, and Georgia was just a tougher team.
Yeah, Georgia just dominated all facets of the game between, you know, just throwing the ball like we haven't seen Georgia do in a long time. We'll talk about Carson Beck and his performance in a moment, but the quick, you know, stat line is 28 for 35, 389 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 1 interception. I know he had the interception, and we'll talk about all that as we get into it, but that's a pretty phenomenal night passing for a Georgia offense, a team that total passing was 435 yards, and then total offense was 608 yards. Offense doesn't get any better than what you saw from Georgia. I mean, shoot, they didn't even punt until the fourth quarter. It was the first drive of the fourth quarter when Brock Vandegrift came in, and they had to punt then. They did not have to punt until then. So the entire time the starting offense was on the field, it was nothing but scoring drives or that one interception as well. So you can't really complain about that. And defensively, you know, it was a strong start for them, 21-0 for Georgia to start. And then finally they got through and scored a touchdown on Georgia's defense that had been playing very well. They were getting pressure on Leary. They weren't letting the running game explode on them like we had seen them do against Florida. They were well contained. And, you know, it was a great performance from Georgia from top to bottom.
Yeah, and, you know, I was talking to my dad before the game, and we were kind of talking about why necessarily people were scared of Kentucky's run game, because he was like, you know, Ball State held the running game to like 56 rushing yards, and then they had another game where they maybe just barely eclipsed 70 rushing yards. So really, it was really just the Florida performance that really boosted them. I mean, they had 2 80-plus yard rushes, and that's going to get you 200-plus rushing yards. And
right,
so I was like, I really don't know that it should scare them that much. And then Devin Leary, I just was not impressed with him whatsoever. I think there was a lot of hype built up around him in the offseason. I know that he was pretty solid at NC State, but I don't even know if I was really that impressed with him at NC State either. And so I mean, if you could shut down Kentucky's run game and you can force Devin Leary to kind of beat you and push the ball down the field, I mean, you saw it happen. I mean, he wasn't accurate the entire night. Georgia's defensive line and linebackers were able to get to the second level and just make him feel uncomfortable the entire night. So I think Georgia's defensive game plan was great, and they did something that Florida wasn't able to do. They were willing to match Kentucky's physical toughness up front on the defensive line. They're willing to strike their blockers. They're willing to play at a higher physicality than them. And if you don't do that, if you don't play up to Kentucky's level, then that's what they're going to do to you. They're just going to ground and pound their whole way to a victory, and they're just going to coast their way to a victory. But, man, I don't know what it is about Kentucky, but Kirby Smart and Georgia, they have Mark Stoops' number figured out.
Yeah, I think they were talking about it during the game, and Mark Stoops has been at Kentucky for 11 years now. Georgia has beat Kentucky, I think after last night, 14 consecutive times. So the entire time he has been there, he has not been able to get the best of Georgia, and he dang sure hasn't been able to get the best of Kirby Smart since Kirby has been there. Most of those games have been pretty high scores over, like, at different times. And then last year, obviously, you and I were at that game, and it was a low-scoring game, but it was ice cold. Throwing the ball was miserable. It was windy. You know, everybody's hands were cold. So I think they tried to just win that game, get out kind of thing. Last night, it was a little chilly as well in Athens, Georgia. Got down, you know, late in the game, about halftime, it was in the 50s. Wind was blowing. It was kind of cool, but Georgia's offense was still hot and still moving and able to keep everything, you know, on the positive side for pretty much the entire game. But let's go ahead and talk about, you know, let's go ahead and talk about Carson Beck. As you can see in the title, we're talking about his Heisman candidacy at this point. We're six games in. He's got 11 touchdowns, only three interceptions, or 11 passing touchdowns, three interceptions. I believe he's got 13 total touchdowns with a couple rushing mixed in there as well, and almost 1,900 yards passing at this point. So I think the case is starting to be made, especially when you have a performance like this where you throw for 389, four touchdowns and a pick. You're pretty much setting yourself up. And I know you had tweeted a stat a week or two ago, I think, before the Auburn game. It was after the first four games, and you were talking about his current pace and what he was on track to have at the end of the year. You included you know, the running backs and everything like that in that conversation, Brock Bowers, all that. So I mean, if he stays on this pace, he's currently averaging 314 yards a game right now. That's insane. He is the first quarterback to do have three straight games of 300 plus yards since Aaron Murray did it in 2013. I mean, he is doing something we don't see at Georgia quarterback position, or haven't seen very often, at least.
Yeah, I mean, 312 games in 13 games, he would be on pace for 4,056 passing yards. I mean, it seemed
regular season.
Yeah, including the SEC championship game. And then that wouldn't.
Oh, that's 13 games.
Yeah. That wouldn't include a bowl game and then probably a college football playoff game either. So he's definitely on pace to break Stetson Bennett's record that he set last year. Yeah. And I mean, heck, he has the fourth most passing yards in the entire country right now. Like, when's the last time you heard a Georgia quarterback being in that type of conversation of, like, he's top five in the entire country passing yards? And, you know, it's weird because he's kind of, until, like, over the last 2 weeks kind of set aside from this, but he's kind of done it very quietly. Like, over the first couple of games and up until the Auburn game, people weren't really realizing that Carson Beck was putting up some legitimate eye-popping numbers. And then you get into Auburn, and now this week where you have four touchdowns and dang near throw for 400 yards. Now everybody's like, oh my gosh, Carson Beck is actually legit. And then, of course, but it's so funny because I think that Carson Beck does have a legitimate argument to be put in the Heisman conversation right now. I mean, heck, he plays for the number one team in the country. He went on the road and was phenomenal against Auburn. And then he comes back and repeats that performance against Kentucky, against a ranked team, and throws for four touchdowns. I mean, that's more than worthy enough to be put in the Heisman conversation right now. And I thought it was funny that Brock Bowers, during his post-game interview, he was saying, someone asked him about the drop touchdown and everything, and he said, was Carson kind of giving you a little bit of crap for that? And he's like, no, honestly, I was giving him crap for it because I was like, dude, you could have had 400-plus passing yards and five touchdowns if I didn't drop that pass. So he's like, I told him I got to humble you every now and then.
Yeah, had to keep him off. Even the announcers after that drop was like, that's not something you're going to see very often, so remember it, because that just doesn't happen. And they were like, look, he is human after all. I mean, and it was, like you're saying, it was a great pass. It was right into both of his hands. You know, he was going to the ground. It wasn't an easy catch by any means, but it was a very catchable ball for Brock Bauer's standard, considering later in the game, he caught one for a touchdown and got knocked out. I mean, just got hit straight in the face almost and held on to it. So he's usually able to pull that ball in. And yeah, you're right. If he had done that, he would have had 400 yards and he would have had five touchdowns on the game. Let's talk about like the downside real quick on that interception that he threw. And I want to kind of build the stage for people that saw it and maybe looked like it was a bad, which it was. It was not a great decision. He threw it. You know, it was the same route that they ran earlier in the game that was a touchdown to Marcus Rosemy Jackson on the first drive, you know, kind of crossing over, kind of a deep post or over in that sense. And, you know, the linebacker dropped back into that zone right there where he was at. So he couldn't throw it right to his chest. He tried to throw it over top of him, and he should have honestly just ate that ball, but he ended up throwing it over him right to the safety on that play. So he got him on it, but he did sail it on that one, Dan. I see that. But the thing that I want to point out on this, and I'm not taking that away because it was a bad decision and that's on him. You know, it's a bad play by him. The play before that, though, was the 3rd and 2 or 3rd and 1, whatever it was, I think. And he got the first down, throwing about 15 to 20 yards downfield to Marcus Rosemy Jack Saint, but he got called for an offensive pass interference on a push off. Never got to see the replay to see how bad that one was, but he was wide open, so I would say he probably did push off pretty aggressively, but neither here nor there on that. But the point is, that first down would have kept going. They probably would have scored. The drive would have kept going. They probably would have scored on it. But instead, it's now 3rd and 16, and he's trying to get the first down, and he forces something downfield. So it's one of those things that a penalty sets him up to feel like he needs to force the ball. Now, he played it incredible throughout the entire game. That's his one blemish. You would like to see him, you know, maybe tuck it, throw it away or something like that and not force it into a spot that he really doesn't have the opportunity to do anything with. But when you're looking at it from a holistic game perspective, you know, that if that's your only issue and at that point you're up by, you know, 20-something points, you can live with it.
No, exactly. That's when you want those mistakes to happen. Let them happen when you've already got the game kind of handled and you're just kind of at that point stat padding, if you will. Not that's what they're actually doing at that point in the game, but you know, the game's in control. If that's when your interception is going to come, we'll live with that. We just can't, you know, like we said a couple weeks ago, we can't have these drives where we're turning it over on the first drive of the football game, or we're turning it over as soon as we get out of halftime and we're trying to make a statement and carry our lead even further into the game. So it's all about the timeliness of turnovers, really, because, I mean, turnovers are going to happen. Guys are going to make mistakes. Fumbles are going to happen. Interceptions are going to be thrown. But it really matters when those mistakes happen and when those turnovers occur. And I think over the past couple weeks and when they played South Carolina, I think those turnovers were kind of happening at inopportune times. You know, kind of like when they played Missouri into last year. You know, you had a couple fumbles, and those fumbles just did not happen at times that you really need a fumble to happen. So good to see that they finally got maybe rid of that turnover bug a little bit. And yeah, Ra-Ra Thomas, definitely a bright spot in the football game as well. I think, you know, people have been waiting for someone, you know, everybody was glad to see Ladd McConkey come back into the football game because we know he's reliable. We know that he's a guy that you can always go to and he's always dependable. But me specifically, at least, I've been waiting on someone else in that wide receiver room to kind of finally step up. And it looks like Rojack, which, by the way, that's what he said in his media availability last week. That is what he wants to be called now. So we'll go with Rojack instead of Marcus Rosemy Jack Saint. So I think Rojack has kind of stepped up into that role. Dominic Lovett, while he may not be putting up the numbers that he did at Missouri, he's definitely stepped into his role a little bit more. I think he's continuing to get more comfortable in this offense. And then Ra-Ra Thomas, I mean, they raved about him all offseason. It was just a matter of time of him also getting comfortable in this offense with Carson Beck. And I think he's reached that because Beck was targeting him a lot on Saturday. Same with Rojack. And now you have that with Bowers as well. I think this offense is finally, you know, we always say you don't want to peak too early. Kirby Smart mentions it a lot too, is that you don't want to be playing your best football at the beginning of the season. As the season progresses, that's when you want to start playing your best football. And what better time? You want
to get better as the season goes.
Exactly. And that's what Georgia has done. I mean, you're 6 weeks in now, and it looks like Georgia is starting to play their best version of football right now. And that's a great thing to see.
Yeah, and I'm glad you just talked about those two guys, because those were on my bullet points for conversations tonight, because we've seen Carson get a lot more comfortable throwing to all of these different receivers that, you know, he had to build some chemistry with in general. You know, he was a first-time starter. He's played with these guys at practice and stuff like that, but it's different at game speed and learning how they manipulate the defense on their routes and how they run those and everything like that. So Rojack being probably one of his biggest third down targets at this point of the season that I've noticed outside of Brock Bowers, because he's always going to be, you know, a big target. And he has been able to step up in those moments. He's usually open and he usually brings that ball in. So it's something that I've been extremely excited to see from him. I remember, you know, his freshman year a couple years ago, he broke his ankle on a touchdown play against Florida. And then that was, you know, halfway through the season as a freshman. And then he was hurt the rest of the year. Then the next season took him a while to get back. And then when he was coming back, you know, he's still playing behind, you know, Brock Bowers, Ladd McConkey, you know, Adonai Mitchell. There were so many other targets. So it kind of, he had to step back and not take that lead role yet. But now that, you know, AD Mitchell is gone, you know, Ladd's been hurt. You know, you've got those transfers with Ra-Ra and Dominic Lovett. So now you've had his chance to really step up as a leader in that wide receiver room. And he's definitely answered the call throughout the season. Now he's had a couple drops, but so have every single receiver on this roster, including Brock Bowers has had a couple drops at this point. You know, him being able to step up the way he has shows me that he's grown and he's ready to take a leadership position there. But Ra-Ra Thomas, you know, he was slow to start the season out, which once again takes, you know, chemistry to build with a new team, new playbook, new quarterback, all that good stuff. And, you know, he had a couple drops in that first two games. And it was like, all right, let's get him to calm down. That touchdown catch he had last night was ridiculous. I mean, his body control to go up and get that left foot down, I'm talking less than an inch from the sideline, maintain control to the ground with the defender pushing him. That's unbelievable body control and ability from a guy that's new to this roster.
Well, to what plays into Georgia's favor, or at least I think it does, is with how good Brock Bowers is playing, and then also with how well Oscar Delp has kind of taken on this new role of being an end-of-line blocker, taking on the dirty work that we saw Darnell Washington take on his 3 years at Georgia. And he's not a Darnell Washington, don't get it twisted, but that is basically the role that he's serving.
Right.
You're going to live in 12 personnel offensively, and that's fine, because when you are in 12 personnel, it automatically makes, you know, we talk about the defense having to make decisions before the ball is even snapped. And that's what you do when you're in 12 personnel, when you have two tight ends on the field and Brock Bowers is one of them. You're automatically making the defense make a decision and telling their hand just a little bit before the ball is even snapped. But that also means you only have two wide receivers on the field. And while Georgia is deep enough to have four wide receivers on the field or three wide receivers on the field, I think it also allows Mike Bobo to be a lot more creative with the offense, and it makes the defense have to pay a little bit more attention to the personnel, because if you want to put Rojack and you want to put Ra-Ra Thomas out there together, that's going to be a lot different than what it would look like if you had Ra-Ra Thomas and Ladd McConkey, or Rojack and Ladd McConkey, or Dominic Lovett in one of your X receivers. You know, that's going to be a lot different. I think it allows you to be very multiple. And I honestly think it's why you've been able to see Brock Bowers get so wide open at times, because everybody's like, how the heck do you leave Brock Bowers wide open? And they want to blame the defense. But I honestly think it should be credited to Mike Bobo, because I think he does a great job of setting things up. He's done a great job of disguising things and making the defense think they see one thing, but it's totally different, especially against a defense like Kentucky, who plays a lot of zone. I think his play calling was phenomenal on Saturday, as it has been for the most part this season.
Yeah, he had a slow start to the season, you know, play call wise. Just not saying that he was making bad calls. It wasn't like he was doing what some fans like to say, the run, pass, punt kind of mentality. He definitely has not had that the entire season. He's thrown the ball more than he's ran the ball every single game this year, I believe. And it's going to continue to go that way. What I am happy to see is, you know, earlier in the games, we're getting some deeper routes. First drive of this game, that touchdown to Rojack was over the middle. It's a deep over, you can call a Dover or kind of like a post essentially, you know, and wide open, great scheme, pulled the linebackers up, you know, and dropped it right in there for him to run with it. So showing that early in a game that he's comfortable with Carson now being able to take a shot downfield in these early drives and take that chance early to get on the board, I think that's something that now that he's seen that he can trust Carson to do it and make the right decisions in those situations, you'll see Mike Bobo make more of those calls. And I think that's the biggest growth thing that I've seen from Bobo over the course of the past six games. Was early on, he was a little bit more conservative at the beginnings of games. Second half came around, and that's when he started opening up again and doing those same things. But now he's starting to be willing to do that on the first drive. And that's something that is going to, you know, propel Georgia forward and succeed offensively early in games.
Well, you know, everybody was getting kind of bent out of shape a little bit about like, oh, we're getting off to such slow starts offensively. And I think one thing that helped is you got the ball first. Mike Bobo had a beautiful open script for you. Dejon Edwards had a nice couple of runs. Carson Beck kept the sticks moving. And then, yeah, you hit your deep shot to Rojack for a touchdown, immediately put 7 points on the board. But another thing that plays into that as well is the defense was getting off the field very quickly. You know, typically, a lot of times this season, like when an opponent has their first drive against Georgia's defense, that's typically one of their more successful drives. They're kind of able to move the ball down the football field, and it eats up a lot of clock. And that's why you're like, man, Georgia only had one possession in the first quarter. Well, Georgia's defense was able to get off the field very quickly, get the ball right back to the offense. The offense was able to go right back down the field and put 7 more points on the board. And so that's what allowed you to get to a fast start. It wasn't just the fact that the offense was clicking on all cylinders and Carson Beck was able to hit a deep ball. It also has to do with the fact that your defense shut down Kentucky early in that football game. They did not let them get anything, any type of momentum or any type of success on their opening drive.
No, it was something nice to see. And when you talk about the defense like that too, when you look at their total performance, they gave up 13 points, which, you know, that's not a bad game
at
all.
That's Kirby Smart
standard. If you can tell me right now that Georgia's defense will allow 13, 14 points a game the rest of the season, go ahead and book Georgia a national championship, because that's, easy money right there every single time. Now, the first touchdown drive they had, they moved pretty well and they got it going and they scored. But I believe that first touchdown drive, it was either the first or the second. I think it was the first touchdown drive they had. They kind of got a little bit of assistance to get there. Your defense was coming up and making a stop and doing a lot. And then you get this, what looked like kind of a phantom roughing the passer call. You know,
that was so bad.
It was so bad. He hit him in the chest, like with his helmet right on the shoulder pad right here. Didn't even take him to the ground, right? Like just kind of bounced off and he fell to the ground. And Devin Leary was still standing backpedaling. So he didn't even take him to the ground. He just let go of the ball. The ball was thrown terribly because of it. That's because the contact came and he didn't drive him to the ground. I don't know how that's roughing the passer. Even the commentators were like, that's a weak call right there. I don't know what you're supposed to do as a defender. He didn't hit him in the head. He got him right in the shoulder. It wasn't the neck. It was clean, right? So that's the first one. That gives them a first down. They move a little further. And then we get the disconcerting signals call on JDJ on Pop. Which, because he said move, and apparently Kentucky, from the commentators were saying, Kentucky talked to the refs prior to the game starting and said, hey, Georgia does this. That's something to be watching for, and basically gave them a heads up, and Georgia did it. I think that's the only time Georgia did it in the entire game that I noticed, where they shifted that D line like they do. But JDJ, you know, he makes that call. And I've never seen it on a vocal thing. I didn't know like saying move was an issue. Yeah. I didn't know that they talked was a problem. I know clapping was, because that's what a signal is from a quarterback, clapping. But I think that's the first time I've seen it the way that they called it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Georgia has always said move when they do the defensive line shift. Like, I'm pretty sure that's what they have always done to kind of signal that. So I don't know what that was about, but obviously I guess Kentucky was trying to find something that maybe would give them an advantage later in the football game, and it helps them out. So kudos to them if they figured that out.
Led them to a touchdown on that drive. Those two penalties right there is what led them to that touch. I think it was their first touchdown, but if somebody remembers differently, correct me on it.
I think you're
right. Pretty sure it was the first touchdown of the game for them. Yeah. And, you know, I won't say that the penalties only benefited them, because Georgia's third touchdown honestly was a gift from the refs. Because I was down there on the field and I watched the game back today too, at least most of it, to kind of confirm some things that I saw. And it was third down, third and eight or whatever it was, I can't remember. And Carson Beck throws ball, gets batted down at the line. The refs don't blow a whistle. So Kentucky's thinking the ball's live. They see it sitting on the ground. Player picks it up and starts running. They still have not blown a whistle. While they're running, they still have not blown a whistle. And then Zero turns around. And it was, I will say this, it would have been a penalty regardless, even if the ball was live, because it was a crackback block on Cedric Van Pran and Granger. So he knocked him right in the teeth going backwards. So it would have been a penalty even if the ball was live. But they didn't blow the whistle until after he hit him. That's the first whistle that was blown. And when I watched the game back, I was listening for it, and I did not hear a whistle once again. So that was a little bit of a gift, because it gave Georgia a first down, and then they ended up driving down the field and scoring a touchdown for their third. So it put it up to 21-0. So Georgia did benefit from that, but they took advantage of that penalty. They were on their own side of the field, still had to drive about 80 yards, whatever it was, from that. But that was a little bit of a gift from the refs on that one.
Yeah, you know, give and take. Everything's, I guess you could say everything worked out the way it was supposed to. It eventually evened out for them. But, you know, something I noticed before the game going into Saturday was that Kentucky, when they went on their first road game and their only road game prior to Georgia, was that they committed 10 penalties for 106 yards. It's like, that's something to keep an eye on with them going to Sanford Stadium. And then also it being a night game, like the fans have an opportunity to really disrupt some things for Kentucky. I can't remember how many penalties they ended with. I think maybe 8 or 9.
They had five. They only had 5 penalties for 60 yards, and the big ones were honestly roughing, you know, or unnecessary roughness penalties or unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. They had a couple of those. Frustration penalties are what they were committing. They really weren't committing pre-snap penalties like false starts. I think they had one of those that I remember. They really, and the environment was loud. It was a great Sanford Stadium environment. But shouts to Kentucky, learning from that first game on the road. And they did not commit a lot of those pre-snap penalties, anything like that. But they did have some frustration penalties where they were big penalties at that.
Yeah. No. Well, I do want to touch on the defense a little bit because we've talked about the offense plenty at this point, and I think the defense definitely deserves some praise. One thing I want to say, anybody, any of these fans that were on JDJ's back or Pop's back, the entire season.
During the South Carolina game, especially.
Oh, my gosh. It seems like every single week all I was hearing about is C.J. Allen needs to play more. JDJ ain't it this year. Pop needs to be benched. Like, Pop just ain't it this year. We need some fire at linebacker. We just don't have any more. I don't know what you guys didn't learn from last season after watching JDJ nearly win the Butkus Award last year. I mean, he was a dang near finalist for the award. And I don't know if you guys just thought that all of a sudden he lost his ability to play football or whatever, but like you had to have known that eventually him and Smile Munden and the rest of that linebacker core was going to get it figured out. I mean, for crying out loud, they had the best linebacker coach in the entire nation coaching them up every single week. Yeah. Those dudes are going to get it figured out eventually. And I thought JDJ played phenomenal. I thought Smile Munden played phenomenal. Warren Brinson continues to show out. So for anybody, any of the naysayers about JDJ, I hope you ate some crow on Saturday and you learned.
Definitely did.
Don't talk bad on Georgia's linebackers, man. Like, we always tell everybody every single offseason we get in recruiting and when we talk about the next guys they're going to step up, we always say linebacker is never a position that you need to worry about at the University of Georgia. Like, it's
coached so well, man. It doesn't matter who if they don't get the highest recruit, they'll make the guy they get one of the best players in the country by the time they leave Georgia. Yeah. It's unreal.
It's like worrying about the tight end position right now at Georgia. Like, what are you doing? Like, that freaking line, that area of the depth chart has so much freaking talent on it.
It's insane.
It doesn't matter what happens.
Lucky was moving around and getting in the game this week too. Speaking of tight ends.
Yeah, that was good.
Impressive to see. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. We were talking about the linebacker room, and that's definitely something that I was noticing too. Like, every time I looked up, you know, he had 2 sacks last night, talking about Pop, and he seemed like he was in the backfield all the time, making plays on the running game, not just sacking the quarterback, but he was making plays all over the place on both sides, left and right. So he was playing side to side, and it was just, he was definitely getting a lot more comfortable play. I noticed something was Xavier Sorey was getting a decent amount of playing time at linebacker this week as well. So that was nice to see. And he was playing well. He had some pass breakups and he was doing a lot in that part, but I was excited to see him get out there. He's a guy that we've talked about for a long time on this depth chart that hasn't really had the chance to play much, but it looks like he's getting a little bit more run during meaningful playing time at this point.
Yeah, Xavier Sorey is one of those guys where, you know, when he was at high school, he's one of those guys where he never really had to learn a playbook while he was at IMG Academy or at any point in his high school career because he was the best athlete on the field. And so what you're going to do with the best athlete on the field defensively is you're going to say, just go get after the quarterback, bro. Just go be the best athlete on the field and go get after the quarterback. You don't have to learn a playbook or anything like that. And so then when he got to Georgia and then he's expected to learn a playbook at that point, and you know, you have to be one of the smarter football players on the field to play linebacker, specifically at the University of Georgia. And so it's kind of taking him time to kind of pick things up and really get comfortable playing that position. And thankfully, you have had 2 and 10 for them to be able to buy him some time and not necessarily just throw him to the woods immediately when he got there. But now, and you know, the first few weeks, if you watch state team play, you're kind of like, man, why are you there? You kind of look out of sorts. You don't look like you're ready. But I think what Schumann and the the coaching staff has decided is that we're just going to let him get reps, and that's the best way for him to figure things out. And while it may not always look pretty and he may not play his best every single week, I guarantee you by the month of November and by the time December rolls around, everybody's going to be like, holy crap, 18 looks like the best player on the football field right now. He keeps making plays every single – and so I think that's kind of what you're seeing and what you saw a little bit on Saturday is just how much potential he does have. And again, why the linebacker room at Georgia is in such good hands.
It's always in good hands. It's something, like you said a minute ago, that's not something we ever concern ourselves with because we – I mean, and when you say they miss somebody, they still get like a top 100 player. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's not like they're missing – they may miss the number one linebacker in the country or something like that, but they're still going to go out there and get a dude that they can train up and make exactly what they want to be at Georgia, and that's exactly what they've done with all of these guys so far. It's and even when CJ Allen has been in there, he's looked good, you know, and get when he does get reps. So it's not a position that I have any concern for. And one thing I did, still talking about the defense, one thing I noticed last night, which has been different than what we've seen through the first five games, was Kamari Lassiter seemed like the cornerback that was getting picked on last night. And if you can correct me if I'm wrong, and anybody else in the comments, I don't think I saw a single ball thrown at six, Dalen Everett. Mm-hmm. Not one. He must have been locking down on his side because they weren't trying even the slightest. They were throwing at Kamari Lassiter a good bit throughout the entire game, and he gave up a couple plays, but he made a lot of really good plays as well. A few pass breakups. He was in there on one of the sacks with Pop. You know, he was playing extremely well, but that was something that I noticed was they weren't going after, you know, Dalen Everett at all. So shouts to him for improving.
Yeah, and not to discredit Dalen by any means, because I think he did play a good football game. You know, it's one of those things of if you're not hearing a DB's name called, it probably means that he's doing his job. So I'm not going to take anything away from him. But what that may have been a case of is to justify why maybe they're throwing at Kamari Lassiter is because Kentucky doesn't necessarily have a whole lot of depth at wide receiver. And Devin Leary may have just been like, I know my top guy, that's our best chance. I'm just going to keep trying and feeding him and taking shots at him. And so, yeah, eventually when you have that many shots thrown at you, you're going to let up some plays. But, I mean, Fran Brown named him the Strap Mob Player of the Week. So, obviously, he was doing his job. Kamari Lassiter still played a phenomenal football game. I think he is one of the top cornerbacks in all of college football, but I haven't seen a whole lot of people showing much love to three, and maybe it is because he's been so quiet for the first 5 weeks because people aren't throwing his way. So maybe that's why people aren't ranking him because they're not really seeing him make any plays. But, man, I know one thing for sure. Kamari Lassiter is one of the best tacklers I have seen at the defensive back position at Georgia in a long time. I mean, that dude is just always blowing up plays behind the line of scrimmage. He evades blocks on screens. That dude just loves contact. He seeks contact. And I think he does a really, really good job of playing defensive back for Georgia. He doesn't let up many big plays. And that's something that you always like to see from your defensive backs. And I think that guy's going to be a top 100 draft pick when the NFL draft rolls around next year.
Yeah, he's an absolute dude. And one thing that I really, really like about him that you haven't really seen from that many Georgia cornerbacks, because I think it's part of the way they're coached to play defense. They kind of play in phase and they kind of play the receiver, not pay attention to the ball as much on the like on those shorter routes. He does a really good job at turning to the ball and trying to make a play on the ball itself and not just trying to make a play on the receiver. You know, he had one that he could have picked off, but the receiver became a defender and got his arm hooked around and pulled that ball out from Kamari. But he had a chance to pick one off because of that. He's good at, like, he sees the receiver kind of slowing or turning. He turns to find the ball and makes a play on it. That's why when he gets pass breakups, a lot of times it's his actual hand on the ball when he does it. And so that's something that, you know, I just feel like Georgia's defensive backs haven't done that over the past several years with Kirby Smart. I think they teach him to kind of just worry about the receiver. If he doesn't get away from you, you're good. But what happens is the last guy that wore three on that roster in Campbell, he used to drive me. He was incredible. He was a first round draft pick when it was all said and done. He was a great cornerback and he's playing well in the NFL.
Very well.
But he used to drive me crazy because he would have that same route that Kamari almost picked off. He would have ran through that wide receiver, got a PI call because he never turned around for the ball. But he was always in coverage. He was always playing really well. But that's just what happened. He would always play the receiver and end up running through the guy. At least 3 to 4 times a season, he would have a ball that was pickable and that he would end up with a PI on because he didn't turn around. So that's something that I really like seeing from Kamari is he's good about getting that head around and getting a hand on the ball or trying to make a play on the ball like that as well. So That's the biggest thing that catches my eye with him, other than the fact that he's always in good coverage for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, the secondary has been everything as advertised. The only question we had was about who's going to play opposite of Kamari Lassiter. Dalen Everett has seemingly locked up that position for them, and he's played really well. You know, he had that massive play against Auburn where he had the PBU, where the receiver caught it. He knocked it out of his hands, and he forced him to get off the football field. And then, of course, Malachi Starks, Javon Bullard, Tyke Smith. Those guys have played out of their mind as well. They played good as a core. And then Kamari Lassiter, of course, like we just mentioned. I mean, the secondary, you can't ask for much more. I mean, that's another room that's just loaded down with talent. And they have consistently answered the call every single week this year. I really don't have any complaints about the secondary overall. I think they play clean football, and they're always in the right spots, every single one of them. If you have your starting core out there, if you have Bullard, Starks, Lassiter, and Dalen Everett, that secondary is never going to be out of sorts, and they're never going to be in the wrong spots, and they're always going to be making plays for you back there. And that's a good thing to know, especially this year. And that's comforting to know this year specifically, because you don't have a Jalen Carter or Jordan Davis or Devontae right. White up front. I mean, Warren Brinson and Azeer Stackhouse, Zion Logue, all those guys up front, I think they have done a tremendous job filling that void, and I think they all connectively have played great football. Warren Brinson specifically, that dude is, like you just said, he's always in the backfield, and same thing for the other two. But when you do have a little bit of a drop-off on defensive line, it's good to have a secondary. I think it was Malachi Starks that was talking about this a couple weeks ago, and he was like, you know, we always say defensively, like, we're nothing without our defensive line, and our defensive line is nothing without us. You know, if the secondary isn't doing our job, then our defensive line can never get home, and they can never make plays in the backfield. But if they're not doing our job, then we can never cover long enough, and we can never stay in position. We're going to let up big plays. So those two positions always complement one another. And with how good your secondary is, and now with how good your defensive line continues to get every single week, that defense is slowly becoming a 10 out of 10 like we expect from Georgia.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you talk about holding a quarterback to 10 of 26 for 128 yards and two touchdowns on the game, that's pretty daggum good when you're playing an SEC quarterback, mm-hmm. an SEC opponent. That's a ranked opponent that was 5-0. I mean, you can't get much better as a defensive back unit on there. But like exactly what you said, that's something we've always talked about back when, you know, when we had Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, those guys, we would sit here and talk about, yeah, maybe our secondary's not so good, but guess what? A secondary's best friend is a pass rush and a good defensive line. And that's what they had when they had those guys there. So it's complementary football all the way around. I think that 11 guy unit, especially as the season goes by, they're going to continue to play extremely well together. You know, the secondary has always been extremely good for Georgia this year, outside of when you started, you know, when Bullard was out, you had to plug and play a couple guys. You could see a difference there. But now that he's back, I mean, it's definitely showing that they've got that strong unit again. They're able to control that back end of the field. And then you let your guys go hunt. That's part of the reason that you've seen this defensive line be able to get in the backfield as many times, like Warren Brinson being able to get back there as much as he has. And that's in part because that defensive back room is doing their job every single down, giving them the opportunity to make a play. Obviously, the middle linebacking crew and the outside linebackers between Michael Williams, you know, JDJ and all those guys, like they're playing extremely well. They're doing well in coverage. You can't really complain about their performance either. They're getting in the backfield and getting sacks and everything as well. So no complaints about this defense. I know they've given up some points throughout the season at times that people weren't too happy about. I know UAB scored 21, but we talked about that. There was a turnover that led to a touchdown. There was, you know, a short fields that they got, all that kind of stuff. And it kind of takes away from the overall performance. One thing that I'll give you an assignment for after, if you want to look up a stat, if I remember correctly, I believe every turnover that Georgia's had this season has led to maybe a touchdown, if not points in general. Because once again, yesterday, Georgia gives up that pick, and that's the second touchdown for Kentucky. Without that interception, Kentucky doesn't score again in that game. So I'd be curious to see how many points have been scored off Georgia's turnovers this year, because I feel like every game, it's every time they've turned the ball over, there's at least a field goal, most of the time touchdowns.
I might be able to go ahead and tell you right now, but I'm pretty sure you're right, because I had the same thought not too long ago. I was like, man, I mean, that's what's gonna allow this defense to give up points.
I mean, South Carolina scored off of turnovers. Auburn scored two of their touchdowns. We talked about this last week. Auburn scored two of their touchdowns off of turnovers, and they only had two field goals. Otherwise, they scored no touchdowns on their own without getting the ball back. Kentucky scores their second touchdown off of it. UAB scored off of a turnover at least once. Every time they've turned the ball over, they've given up points. And so if the offense can limit those, right, and only do it in a situation like they did yesterday when they've got a big lead, you're just trying to make something happen, you can afford a mistake, and you can afford that touchdown on the other side kind of thing. If they can limit it to types of play like that, this defense is going to start giving up a lot less points throughout the season as well.
Yeah, I know that we're almost at the 40-minute mark, so I'll go ahead and get this – with the few minutes that we have left, we'll go ahead and get talking about this a little bit because I think it is relevant. You know, this was a crazy weekend of college football. I think there's some big losses. I think you learned a lot more about football teams. You know, like USC had their second close game of the season. You know, offense didn't look so dominant as it typically does on Saturday. Texas loses to Oklahoma, so they get their first loss.
Crazy
no longer
right there.
Yeah, that was a great football game. They're no longer in the driver's seat of the Big 12. Maybe you probably get a rematch of the Red River Showdown in the Big 12 championship game. That's at least what it's looking like there. Ohio State, while they did win the football game, Maryland, they struggled a little bit, but it seems like maybe they're still kind of figuring things out a little bit. Michigan looks to be the best football team out there, with Penn State kind of being a dark horse, and maybe they upset one of the two because they do play both Michigan and Ohio State this year. So maybe they get an upset one of these weeks against them, and that really changes some things. But with that being said, this was the first week, like we said at the beginning of the episode, that this was the first week where Georgia played a complete football game. They dominated their opponent like we're used to them doing. And they look like the number one team in the college football. And so, I mean, after winning against Kentucky, I think your biggest challenge remaining on the schedule is Ole Miss. That's probably the team that everybody would say that kind of gives them. Yeah, and that's another thing I want to point out is that the Ole Miss game is at home, and Missouri, who has kind of turned into a team that might threaten you a little bit. Both of those games at home. I'm not sure that Tennessee really scares Georgia fans as much as they maybe would have in the offseason. I think what seeing Joe Milton play and kind of seeing how they've handled some of their other opponents, I think that's kind of cooled off a little bit. But Missouri and Ole Miss, I'd say, are two biggest challenges right now. And like you just said, you get both of those games at home. So, I mean, Georgia looks to be in a prime position to maintain their number one ranking throughout the entire year, go another regular season undefeated. I know we've said all these things in the offseason, but now that we actually have some pen to paper and we actually have some data and some actual numbers to run this off of, I mean, you got to feel really good after Saturday as a Georgia fan, right?
You absolutely have to feel good about it. And like you said, like you got the biggest game being Ole Miss. We talked about that before the season came up, that that was one of the big games that you were going to have this year. And obviously Tennessee was going to be one. I mean, you still got to go to Knoxville. And one thing that, you know, typical, now I'm not, I know there are years that Georgia went into Knoxville and won 41-0 and stuff like that, but that environment is a good college football environment. Things happen there. You know, you got to be careful going in there. You got to have the right mindset and play like you need to. But overall, yeah, exactly what you're talking about. Georgia has to feel good the rest of the season. You know, Jacksonville, after they beat Utah, or after they lost to Utah, and then they ended up beating Tennessee, you know, you started thinking that maybe they were going to be a challenge. But then Kentucky came in and absolutely just curb stomped them. And then now you're going, all right, maybe not. Maybe it was a fluke. And then maybe Tennessee is not as good as we thought kind of thing. So it's one of those things that you've had some back and forth. Yeah, now you got to look for Missouri a little bit. That's not an easy game at this point. You know, last year they gave Georgia fits. This year it's at home. They just went to the wire with LSU, had a lead all game. And going into the fourth quarter, I think they had a 5-point lead. And then after that, that's when LSU kind of
went
and Jaden Daniels
fourth and 32. I don't know if you saw that because I think you may have
I didn't see it, but you told me about it. Yeah.
It was the craziest thing. I think they had maybe two timeouts left. I think there was like a minute and 40 left on the game clock. So there was a fumble
down
before
by 10,
the play,
though, weren't they? Were they down
by
10 when they did that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I just know that there was a fumble before that. You had 2 minutes left. And so, of course, it squirted all around the field. And then, so they ends up being fourth and 32. I was like, okay, punt it. Get them the ball back. You can stop them with your two timeouts, and maybe you have another crack at it. But I think – the only thing I can think of for their justification was that is that they just didn't feel like their defense was going to stop LSU because they pretty much had in the whole second half. But, man, going forward on fourth and 32, that just has to feel like we have no shot anyways, but we're just going to go ahead and try it. And it expectedly, it failed miserably, and they ended up losing the football game. But, yeah, Missouri still, you know, they got some firepower to that offense. Luther Burden and Brady Cook, they've been cooking out there in Missouri. So definitely interested to see how Georgia matches up against them here in a few weeks.
Absolutely. And like you said, Georgia's got – we've talked about it all season, talked about it before the season. They've got the opportunity to run the table. And especially – I know we had people in the comments a couple weeks ago talking about – you know, we talked about different games saying, all right, Georgia didn't look so great at first, but they got off to a, you know, a little slower start in these games, but they've been able to do well. They, you know, struggled against South Carolina. And I made a comparison, I think, after the South Carolina game to, you know, the Missouri game. And somebody was saying, well, maybe not the best comparison because Georgia had – shown that they were a championship caliber team. You know, you think about you had Oregon at the beginning of the year. Well, we may not have had a championship caliber game prior, but now we've had a championship caliber team game at this point. We've seen start to finish Georgia absolutely dominate an opponent that was a ranked opponent. Yeah, it was at home, but there was still a good football team that was 5-0, and you came in there and won 51-13. That is a championship caliber team. Georgia's back to that level at this point, and now they get Vanderbilt next week, then they get a bye week, and then they go to Jacksonville. So they have the opportunity to have another championship level caliber team game against Vanderbilt. Now, that's not a great opponent, but they have a chance to go in and dominate that game, get their bye week, rest up, nurse any injuries that are going on, go down to Jacksonville and show that they are the best team in the country again. That's your opportunity to staple yourself at the top of that list like you pretty much already have. So a lot of excitement over the next couple of weeks for Georgia. Then you get into your stretch where you got Tennessee, you get Ole Miss, and the back end of that schedule is where it starts to get pretty exciting. So nothing but good things coming for Georgia. I'm excited to see what happens next.
Yeah, I mean, you got Vanderbilt this week, then you got the bye week, then you're down in Jacksonville. I mean, season, as it always does, is flying by right now. I mean, heck, halfway over, basically 6 weeks in, 12 total regular season games, so you are halfway over. I mean, just flying on by. So keep on soaking it in, as we always tell you to, especially Georgia fans. Definitely keep soaking this in. It's the glory days of Georgia football, and you should be just enjoying it to the utmost potential of it. So, again, Vanderbilt next week. So, maybe if you want to call it two bye weeks in a row, you probably can. Georgia's a 31.5-point favorite. They are going up to Nashville. Ooh. I am expected to be up there as well covering the team, so that'll be fun. So, just, you know, after playing against a team like Kentucky, having a little bit of smack talk throughout the week, it's maybe nice to have a team like Vanderbilt come up on the schedule where it's like, all right, we can just kind of coast through this week, enjoy the football game on Saturday, then enjoy the bye week and get ready for the last half of the schedule. Because as we just talked about, the last half of the schedule, it is loaded down with some great football games. So looking forward to that. If you haven't already, like and subscribe. Do all that good stuff for us. We are still approaching 400 subs. You guys are slowly getting us there, and we are still looking to get to that 400 mark. So keep on supporting us like you guys always do. We appreciate that, and we are just super – we've been super happy to see all the growth and support that you guys continue to show up every single week, especially with us having a Sunday night and their Sunday night football. And we are so glad that you guys could continue to choose us on your Sunday evenings. But that is going to do it for this week. Stoddard, you can close us out.
Hey, as always, keep it classy in the Classic City, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Classic City Sports. Take a second to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. Feel free to reach out to the Classic City Sports Crew on Twitter with any topics you'd like discussed. You can reach out to Jeremiah at The Stodfather, to Jonathan at Dr_JWill, and make sure to follow at Classic City Pod for show updates. Check back next week for a brand new episode. In the meantime...
Express the sentiments of the entire Bulldog Nation.